partnering with somebody that is trying to innovate and revolutionize, I guess, their industry. There may be some pain points partnering along the way, but ultimately at the macro level, you get to grow and benefit from those changes as well. But you have to embrace them, obviously, as you go.
This is Retained Learnings, a podcast where Canadian finance leaders share strategic advice and potential solutions to answer some of the finance department's most important questions. I'm your host, Rob Kazam, the founder and CEO of Float. Thanks for listening, and I hope you learned something from today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Today, I'm sitting here with Tyler Vassellin, CFO of Calgary-based ShowPass. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today. I'm glad I had the chance to come join you.
Yeah, excited to have you here. To start, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and ShowPass.
Yeah, so I've had the privilege of obviously sitting in the CFO seat here at ShowPass for, I think it's coming on 7 years, I guess 7 years now between controller and CFO. ShowPass is an online ticketing platform. Our MO is to focus on creating technologies that enable event organizers to provide world-class experiences to event goers of all sorts.
Tell us maybe back to the very, very early beginnings. What did you study in school and what got you into the career path for finance and accounting in the first place?
The story's a bit odd, I guess. My dad was a tradesman and I guess got pretty weathered and worn through that. And I got to see that through my childhood. And I always remember he always joked that his accountant was cross-country skiing over lunch. So that's maybe where the infancy of my interest in accounting was. And I had a natural inclination for, just analytics. I was always interested in it, was always good at math. And that just kind of transitioned over to my interest in finance from a educational perspective. And then that drove, I guess, into a bit of a traditional route in Big Four accounting, and then made some other, I guess, career changes thereafter that led me to ShowPass.
Nice. Any wisdom or advice for folks that are starting their career, that first period of time you spent in accounting, the Big Four accounting firm, I think it was EY. Any takeaways or things you'd share from that experience? Or was that just important foundation that you worked through that set you up for success later in your career?
Yeah, I think there's huge value in it. I think the platform has changed a little bit with some of the changes in the CPA-CA stuff. So not really attuned to what changes that has made in regards to the experience. But I think it goes with any experience. Just absorb what you can when you're there. And for me, a big part of that was absorbing what all the clients that I was working on, what their businesses were about, what key important items and values drivers there were in those businesses, and just really understanding what you could when you were in the details from a very unique perspective. That's the beauty of some of the Big Four accounting, or call it the traditional accounting path, is you get to see and get a lot of exposure to various organizations in different sectors, and you get to see it from a unique perspective and understand whether or not it's something that you may be passionate about. So just to say to people, really, really absorb and take advantage of those opportunities to look at companies and understand what your future opportunities could look like when you're sitting in that seat.
Yeah, it's a great point. Just knowing and getting to see, I guess, a lot of different clients, how their businesses work, really valuable real world experience that it sounds like it's come in handy later in your career. And after that, you moved into a role at BDC. What precipitated or led to that change? And what did you take away from your time at BDC?
Yeah, I think when I reflected kind of where I was at in the Big Four accounting world, to me, I realized that I was really driven about value creation and value creation for, I guess, an end customer or a consumer. So, that really made me want to dive in and understand, I guess, more aspects of business. So a bit playing off of what I said earlier is, learn what you can about businesses when you're having an opportunity to see them from a unique perspective. I really understood that was something I wanted to do more of. And that led me to my switch to BDC Capital, which was it was a smaller group within inside of BDC that was about a dozen people that covered the prairies. And the investment thesis in that group was very agnostic, but was focused on M&A and I guess working capital for growth. So high risk investments, generally second place security, limited security investment opportunities. And that again gave me a unique perspective to see a ton of clients over the years that I was there, see what made them tick, see what made management teams tick, and see what different types of structures of business deals and things that were important to these entrepreneurs, as most of them were of kind of small to mid-sized companies. What was really important and what made them successful, and what maybe caused some pain in their journeys, and really take that as a learning opportunity. So that was the way I viewed my switch to BDC and the years that I was there, really.
Nice. That's really interesting. And then what led to the move away when you were there, I think, for just under 3 years? What led you to make the big move into, I guess, ShowPass and an operating business for the first time? How did you navigate that decision and make it?
Yeah, I think it was something that I knew I always wanted to do, whether or not I did my own entrepreneurial thing. You know, maybe a bit back to, you know, the way I grew up. My dad was in the trades, but was his own independent contractor and ran his own business. So, you know, to me, that was always something appealing, was to, you know, to be part of building something. And I think this, you know, ShowPass ended up crossing the desk. So whether it was fate or not, I guess is to be determined. But yeah, I think it goes to like putting yourself in the right place and, you know, having the chance to have ShowPass come across the desk and do due diligence and meet Lucas, the CEO, and him meet me in kind of a, call it a long-winded interview, which is us due diligence the deal at BDC and asking all the tough questions and me getting to see how, you know, Lucas responded to those and the companies responded to those and what trajectory it was on. It was kind of call it the perfect job interview, and ability to see an opportunity in immense amount of detail before making the big jump into the wild world of startups.
That's great. And you know, your experience obviously at EY, meeting lots of different companies and businesses, and then at BDC, do you think those set you up for evaluating ShowPass? Because everyone that joins a startup has to figure out, you know, is this right for me? How did you go about that? We speak with so many people in professional services interested in getting involved in startups, but just don't know how to start, feel scared to make the jump. What rubric did you use to make that decision, and anything you'd leave with folks trying to navigate a similar one?
Yeah, I think part of it is you, through those journeys, you learn what you can and cannot enjoy. So I think there's part of that is reflecting on you know, the pace of work in some of those environments. BDC and EY were both pretty high paced environments. So you really learned what made you tick when you're putting in the time and the hours and up against hard problems. And to me, I think that was the biggest decision-making rubrics more than anything is like, I mean, there's financial risk. And I think you got to make sure that you're in a spot in life where you can make those decisions and that the timing's right there. But I think it's really understanding what makes you tick and what type of person you are and what environment you want to surround yourself with. And for me, it was not the ones I was in historically. I think there was a lot of learnings, but over time you realize that it may not be somewhere you want to be in the long term. And there's self-reflection that it takes in that. And I think for me, that was the biggest decision making rubrics is I wanted to put all my energy into something and wanted to be passionate about it. And I realized over time that it wasn't going to be in any big corporation where I couldn't see my direct addition to creating value. So for me, that's probably the biggest thing that makes me tick is seeing the impact that I can make every day. And that tends to be by nature easier in smaller organizations or startups. You get to see your successes and your failures very intimately.
Such a common theme, you know, impact, especially a couple of years in professional services, you, you don't necessarily have that, I guess. So it's natural to crave it and go somewhere earlier where you can leave your fingerprints. So fast forwarding, you took the controller role at Chopass and joined. And I know you mentioned earlier what Chopass did or does, but can you share a bit about the company when you joined? How many people were there? What was the finance team and the finance situation at the company when you joined, to sort of put it in perspective? Because obviously you've been building that function now for quite some time.
Yeah, so when I crossed paths with Chopass back in 2017, in my days at PDC, it was doing its first equity raise. So the company was really in its infancy, making the decision to really invest in the opportunities that it saw. And the finance team at that time was the Lucas's, the CEO's sister, kind of holding down the day-to-day finance side of things and payroll, in a part-time basis outside of her regular job, and an external accountant/bookkeeper that was kind of doing the other components of things. So really, it got them to where they needed to get to. So definitely served its purpose. But, you know, when they started taking in external money and really kind of putting their foot on the gas, the changes that were needed from a scalability perspective, from a controls perspective, and just a resourcing perspective was going to be dramatically different. So, and I came into, I guess, not a lot, which had its advantages. But there was a lot of work to put in for sure to kind of build it up to what it needed to be to scale.
Yeah. And when you think about that early period, that first sort of 12 months or so, what were some of the early priorities? Could you speak to any of them specifically that you think form the foundation, maybe for anyone joining a startup with an early stage finance function, maybe not that much in place? What are the building blocks that you identified as really critical?
Yeah, so one of the things is obviously the day-to-day functions have to go on. So I think making sure that those are stable and taken care of. I mean, those were already existing for me in a general sense. So we kind of stayed status quo for a little bit till I got the lay of the land. I mean, I did come in with a bit of a, obviously, understanding from being able to due diligence in my past life at BDC. But for me, I'm not one that wants to come in and make decisions off assumptions. Despite, again, knowing the company to a degree, I really spent the first number of months, probably 2-3 months, really understanding the business, like really spending a lot of time understanding the different components, what made it tick, where the value is being created for the end consumer, which is the organizers and on our side, the ticket buyers as well, and making sure that the decisions that I'm making wouldn't interfere or impact in any negative way, and hopefully, positively impact those key functions and core values of the business. So that was my approach. I think, there's probably different times when people would come into companies, and it was just, it was kind of on the launch pad per se. So I had a little bit of time to maybe check out all the components before, lack of better words, blast off. But there's definitely different situations where people are coming in when things are moving a mile a minute. But I do think it's always worth that slowdown to make sure that you're really making informed decisions that, don't have impacts on other components of the business that you don't understand or don't expect. So that was really my approach, and then build out from there.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, doing what you can to build up the finance function as best you can, but also respecting what the company's trying to achieve and the business mandate, the cultural values of the company. Was there something that sticks out to you that you think back and say, I'm glad we did this way, or I'm glad I took the time to think through this so that I didn't implement maybe something that would create friction for the rest of the business or be constraining? That's often, I see the challenge is, how do you create a strong financial discipline while not over controlling a business and remaining and ensuring folks are empowered? Is there something that jumps out to you from that time period?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I would say probably the biggest thing was to not build out traditional processes, like at least at the onset, not draw from other people's playbooks. I think it's very easy to come in and do that, and especially coming from, call it, Big Four accounting background, you've worked in very large entities and policies, procedures, controls are a big function of those larger entities. And I think really waiting on those to understand, and I think, to even touch on that, to this day, it's like something it's something we cringe at as management of the company is the word policy. I think there's obviously kind of the table stakes that every company needs to have in place. But if you put the right people doing the right things, you don't really need to have a ton of those items in place, at least at the smaller size that we were at, especially in the earlier years. I think we're coming to kind of a different influx point where those things matter a bit more. But I think that would be one thing that I would say is just maintain that maneuverability. Don't put too many processes and constraints in place. I mean, otherwise you're constraining the maneuverability of the business in those early stages, and other members of the company or the team don't have the playing field potentially to create amazing impact within their abilities. So that's maybe a long-winded answer to that question, but that's I think probably one of the biggest things that we embraced then, and I think we still embrace as a finance team to this day.
Great wisdom and advice. So you moved from the controller role to CFO about 5 years ago. And that obviously, I'm sure, came with a huge amount of hard work and success in the role, and a lot of obviously success for the company. For other finance leaders looking to level up and maybe make that jump from a controller role or financial operations or strategic finance, what advice would you give on how to take the next step in your career, just generally, and then maybe for those who specifically aspire to be a CFO?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I would say that is probably the cornerstone of it is just like personal growth in so many different directions. And I mean, with a company that's, doubling year over year and nearly continuing kind of those growth rates, is you can't be the same person you were last year taking on the challenges of the coming year. So you really got to personally embrace growth and maintaining your ability to face those challenges that are going to continue to get more and more complicated or come out of different directions that you haven't seen before. So I think really focusing on that. I mean, it's easy to get tied up in the day-to-day part of the business and not really reflect on maybe where you as a leader who's now leading more people, or you as an subject matter expert or new areas of the business that you're now responsible for and fall underneath your purview are coming at you. So that's what I would say is this really cornerstone is what do they say? Grow always and always. I'd really embrace that adage in some sense and grow. One of our core values internally for all members is grow relentlessly. And it is really driven from that concept, is like the company's not the same business next year as it was last year. And fundamentally you got to be able to keep up with those changes. And that is an exponential challenge as leaders, that the pace that you have to keep up with as the company grows, it can outgrow you. And I think that's another reflection point as an executive, that, people do find a time and a place for that where they realize that there's other people. I haven't seen that yet. And in myself, but, it's something that takes a lot of time and effort to keep up with, for sure.
Definitely. Is there one area of personal growth, if you're comfortable sharing, that you would highlight for you that were the biggest achievements, things that you grew the most in and maybe aren't as commonly associated with being a CFO, that would be interesting for listeners to hear?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing for me was really understanding the trade-off between speed and accuracy. Mm. And I think it's, you know, for me, with a kind of highly analytical background and mind, it was probably one of the largest growth items that I reflect upon is like working with a, you know, an entrepreneur like Lucas, who founded the company and as, you know, even prior to me obviously joining, had kind of learned how to navigate and continue to grow. There's value creation in speed, and making sure that you're at least taking a step, whether it be in the wrong direction, is still creating value and understanding what the right direction is. And I remember the early days where I'd get stuck in analysis paralysis, and Luke would come to me and he'd say, can you get, you know, help provide some guidance here or get back to me on this. And then I feel like the game was changing every day, and it was changing every day to a degree, but really, really removing that barrier in your mind as on the finance side, that you really you don't want to roadblock the company in wanting to be right all the time. And that for me is probably the largest part of growth is being comfortable being wrong. And I think a lot of finance people have been trained to not want to be wrong.
Well said. As you grew, obviously, the business and yourself over the last 5 years, I'm sure one part of the business that definitely grew was the finance function. And I'm curious about what changed in the finance function over the last 5 years, and how did you decide where and how to build out your support team?
Yeah, I mean, I think we took a pretty slow approach to it. I think for me as a leader, I, for lack of better words, have always wanted to live the pain before and understand it intimately before deciding on a solution. So I think the other item that probably goes along with that is we did face COVID kind of in the middle of our growth trajectory, which took, you know, a big path change for 2 years. So probably the biggest kind of approach that I've taken is surrounding myself with very ambitious people. And it's interesting, by nature, we have a fair number of athletes, or people very regimented in their, call it their daily workout routines, on the finance team. And I think it just speaks to their ambitious nature and their dedication to whatever they're pursuing or have pursued in the past. And we have a pretty lean team. There's four of us right now. So extremely lean, but very, very ambitious individuals that kind of build each other up and are continuing to pursue personal growth and growth of the business and being part of that journey. So yeah, we've, you know, there's been some missteps along the way, and I think there's been different needs in the business as it's changed pace. But I'd say that's probably the regiment we've taken is just building very, very slowly, and solving one problem at a time, and then building it with the right people has been a huge thing. That ability of trust, especially kind of within the world of Showpass Finance, is, I guess, any finance is critical in regards to being able to delegate some of the larger items and being able to continue to grow the skill sets on the team that we have. So, I mean, I probably can't say it enough. This is a shout out to my team for sure. Is like having amazing people makes amazing things be able to happen, and definitely makes me look good, makes me looking good easier, I guess. And I can't say it enough that's really more the team than it is anybody.
That's great. And last question before we change gears a bit, you talk about the importance of a team. You mentioned the sort of competitive spirit and culture of the company. What are your suggestions and advice for finding great talent? Where do you look for people, and What do you look for in them?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we've found success in is having frank conversations in the interview process. I guess, sorry to jump back to where to look for them. We definitely don't look at experience as a first thing, or at least I don't when I'm looking at bringing somebody onto the team. I think experience can be learned pretty quickly within an organization, and transferability of other experiences is always questionable. So character is the number one, and that's probably well said by most people. But I think the second item is understanding what their ambitions are and understanding them early on. Why are they wanting to come to Showpass? It's as you progress in your career and as you tend to have high performers, it's a two-way street, and you want people here, and you understand that they may be here for different reasons, and understanding what those reasons are and where the crossover in value creation is for them in their individual growth and career trajectory, and where the crossover for the company realizing value creation from them in their journey. So that's a big thing for us. Referrals, obviously, I think from investors and other high performers is a no-brainer that we've found massive success in. And then I think that ties into like the interview process, is having those frank conversations early on in the interview process about what they're looking for and in their next stage of their career, being truthful about some of the pain points and some of the high expectations that may come with a lean team that I've had, at least. And the people that tend to come out the other side of those are proving to be amazing people that are great to work with on all levels.
Thanks a lot for sharing. So moving on to another hot topic, which we talk a lot about at Float, I think is something in everyone's mind as it comes to year ends and quarter ends, is how Showpass does its planning as a company and your philosophy around that. So I'm wondering, do you have an annual or quarterly planning cycle? And can you tell us a little bit about how it works?
Yeah, so we do annual goal setting. And then underneath that, we do what we call quarterly rocks. And those quarterly rocks are designed to build up to support those annual goals. So we usually have, three, four annual goals, which are highly lofty and designed to, shouldn't say this, but designed to be extremely stretches. And there's no surprise if they're missed in a lot of senses, but they're definitely attainable if we all, put our strong skill sets and minds together. And I think the first part is obviously coming together as a management team annually to formulate those. And what we do is we spend some time offsite, out of the office, to make sure we don't get pulled into the day-to-day needs while we're doing this. And what we do is we bring out the leads for a couple days as well, the team leads, that is, and kind of understand where they're seeing pains in the business, opportunities, and we ask them in advance, obviously, to go to their individuals on their teams and gather, everybody's insights from their day-to-days or perspectives on the business or knowledge and understanding of what maybe others in the industry are doing and we're not doing, and kind of bubble that up and really spend kind of some time in advance of those offsites making sure that happens. And then the leads kind of come and bring those items forward and represent their teams in that regard. And then after the leads participate and have kind of an update on the business as well as participate on where they're seeing the biggest pains and the biggest opportunities, we kind of take that away as executives and directors and really kind of understand where the intersect of a lot of these items are. It's pretty amazing when you start getting kind of all the different teams' perspectives documented, how much of it kind of intersects at some fundamental problems or pain points. And we really spend some time trying to analyze that and understand where we can spend that next year that kind of frees up all those pain points as much as possible across the organization. The approach we take kind of to do that is, it's out of a playbook, I think, by Gino Wickman, I think it is, that talks about kind of how to do planning in fast-paced environments. And I think he's come up with this annual rock and, or sorry, annual goal with quarterly rock approach. That's worked well for us. We've adapted it a little bit, but we've now, you know, kind of gotten it under our belt for, I think it's probably been a year and a half now, where we've been following a very similar process, and it seems to be productive. It doesn't seem to be becoming a thoughtless process, which was always a concern about mine when you start putting structure to these things, is like, how do you make sure you don't lose the thought-provoking conversations in that process? So that's the annual process. The quarterly process is kind of a mini nature of that, where we more so decide is like, what are the key, call it more, not in a dev sense, but more sprint items. What are we sprinting towards over the quarter that we're really focused on bringing together kind of small teams within the organization to focus on? As you know, I think there's about four items again every quarter that we focus on that contribute up to those annual goals, which we call rock. The quarterly ones are what we call rocks. And those we can track more intimately throughout the year and obviously throughout the quarter as they're progressing, where the annual goals are a bit more, like I said, lofty and high level, and sometimes a bit more difficult to measure on a weekly or quarterly or monthly basis. So I don't think there's a secret sauce there. I think the only thing that probably is a few words of wisdom is really making sure that you bubble up the lower level boots on the ground information well in advance of making decisions. I think management teams are always guilty of this, and we've been guilty in the past of making decisions without understanding enough detail, and then putting out, you know, call it the quarterly rocks or the annual goals, and then realizing some flaws in the decision-making process.
Great point. This is ringing a bell, and the concept of listening first really resonates. So thanks for sharing that. Looking ahead to this year, what are the top 2 to 3 pain points that your finance team is tackling right now, if you can share, that others might be facing and thinking about?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is like, and it's probably nothing new to the tech community in Canada, is just being understood by the banks, who we are, what our needs are as a tech company, and how do we work together and I guess become true partners. I think it's something that's, you know, still being worked on within the Canadian banking space. And I think that's a pain point I would really like to resolve. And I think it's a pain point that kind of trickles down into other components of the finance team. I think the other one that kind of comes from that as well is, like, I don't think anybody in the payment space has really conquered the disbursement side of things. I think a big part of our business is dispersing funds out to event organizers. And we just look at kind of the processes that we take to do that. And we're playing with old technologies within the banking space. And I think the limitations that are in the banking space and kind of lack ability for open banking, I think is probably, you know, driving a large portion of those pain points that I guess I'd be hopeful, you know, with some of the recent news in the last number of months, I think there's some hope there that at least the pain point on the disbursement side, you know, that there's some bandwidth with open banking kind of being talked about more in Canada and more supported, that there can be some meaningful changes on that front at least.
And what's your point of view on the role, you know, technology plays for the finance team? Where are you excited seeing progress over the last 5 years in terms of just improving the function overall, the efficiency of companies, and what are the problems that are still not solved? Obviously, you just mentioned one on disbursements, which is a real challenge at scale, especially in a market like Canada. But yeah, what are you excited about? What do you think is not being solved? Any thoughts here?
Yeah, I think from a team perspective, like, we're big on embracing technology. I think the one thing that is very difficult when embracing technology is like timing. it takes a lot of time to implement it right, and it takes a lot of time to understand the problem to the level that you should, in my opinion, to implement something that's future-proof, especially in the finance side. To implement new processes is pretty intensive. So, you know, I think I said it earlier, is like sometimes living in the pain is not a bad thing before implementing technology, and then figuring out the right timing. Some of the things that we've seen massive successes is like just automation in the accounting processes, in every sense. It's interesting, like the role of traditional bookkeeping, I don't want to say it's non-existent, but a lot of the low value add items in regards to repetitive and some of the monotonous items is like the technologies that are out there to streamline that, you know, even such as you guys, really changes what the team can focus on, and where they can bring the value. I mean, I think the one thing I always remember is there's no silver bullet to implementing technology, and iteration is necessary, and continue to, I think, find partners. I think this is probably the biggest thing, finding partners that you see that they're building in the right direction and bringing them into the picture in regards to embracing technology. I think that's, you know, there's an experience on both sides of that where we dealt with partners in the past that just don't embrace growing their business, or haven't embraced growing their business, and they've had an offering that meets a need when you have it, and I think it creates value for a period of time. But if they're, you know, not growing or desiring to grow, then their technology can sometimes fall behind, and then you're re-implementing. So again, I'll put a plug in for Float. One of the things we analyzed when we looked at counterparties in regards to a solution in the card space was where are they going? What does their growth look like? Partnering with somebody that is trying to innovate and revolutionize, I guess, their industry. There may be some pain points partnering along the way, but ultimately, at the macro level, you get to grow and benefit from those changes as well. But you have to embrace them, obviously, as you go.
Appreciate you saying that and the endorsement, and definitely share that perspective. So thanks for sharing and all the great wisdom from your career that you just shared with me. Much appreciated, and I know our listeners will enjoy. To wrap up, do some rapid fire if that works for you.
Sure, hit me with it.
All right. What is the craziest thing you've seen someone try to expense?
I wish I had a fun one. I think the most laughs that we've probably got internally was food choices. I think we tend to get a few laughs, and I thought taquitos at 7-Eleven were a University Days thing or something, but I guess people still enjoy them the odd time.
So those itemized receipts you're going through, yeah. you're now critiquing
the
last food choices.
Itemized receipts get you sometimes, that's for sure.
Yeah. What is your favorite podcast, conference, or other resource that you would also recommend to our audience, finance leaders?
Yeah, I'm not really a big podcast guy or a conference guy. I struggle on those ones because they're a one-way conversation, and I think it's difficult to sometimes understand the risk in applying universal learnings. But I would say building networks, just really focus on building networks, finding people that have been there before you. I think there's kind of two buckets, those that have been there and experienced something similar in the past, whether they've gone through the entrepreneurial journey or built a amazing team, whatever it may be that are problems that you're facing or want to get through. And then I think just having others in the thick of it, similar to you, is very valuable. For me, I think the answer is just the resource would be a network of people.
Well said. A great network goes a long way. And lastly, who is a finance leader that you admire and why?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting one. To me, this would be probably Amy Hood from Microsoft. I think the big thing that I reflect upon in a CFO seat is just like where value comes from. And I think when you look at her journey at Microsoft, she understands the business intimately. she understands where value is being derived, and she's making decisions that I would say are customer centric, and understanding that that's where the value creation is, I think is probably one of the biggest reasons I would say Amy Hood is just, you don't see that perspective too much in finance. And I think it's a bit of a breath of fresh air in regards to how she's approached her role.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate you answering all these questions. It's been a fantastic chat. So thanks for coming on the show, Tyler. This was fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Retained Learnings. We want to reach as many Canadian finance professionals as possible. So if you have 2 minutes to spare, we'd love for you to rate and review the new show. Sharing on social media helps too, and you can tag @Flowcart. I'm Rob Kazam, and until next time, take care.